Being pro-life for me is more like an all-encompassing ethic. It's not just being pro-life in terms of abortion. It's about the death penalty. It's about helping poor people. It's a lot to do with single motherhood.
Sarah definitely agree with it. So she says that, you know, I guess it's about empathy. She doesn't agree with abortion because she doesn't agree with the death penalty. Mm. She doesn't, you know, she doesn't want people to be living in poverty. No. But I would say that preventing abortion is actually the less empathetic way to go.
Mm.
Right? Because there's so many cases, we've discussed loads of them now, where women have to have abortions or they end up having an unsafe abortion.
Mm.
And the fact is, if we ban abortion, it doesn't stop women having them.
Mm.
They just have them in an extremely unsafe way.
Mm.
So I think by saying, okay, we're trying to be pro-life, we're trying to be empathetic, you're not being empathetic to the woman who should really have that choice over her body and her safety.
Mm. Even pro-life people, we can't just blanket them into one. I think there's a bit of nuance in terms of why people are actually pro-life. And the perspective I understood from her is kind of bringing up this question of is abortion the only answer?
Hello, Globies. Welcome to season 2 of the World Health Investigation Podcast. My name is Jocelyn.
I'm Edna. We are young global health professionals and your hosts for the World Health Investigation Podcast.
We are back.
Backity back back.
Backity back 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 with a new season.
New season, new setup.
New topics.
New topics.
And we have a new guest.
A whole guest.
With a whole new perspective. And her name is Samira. She did a master's in international public health at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, and she is passionate about women's rights and international development. So please welcome Samira.
Yay!
Hello.
I'm glad to be here and talking about a topic that I'm really, really passionate about. So it's very exciting.
Very exciting. So before we get into it, we have some hot tea, some hot new topic of the week. Adina, do you want to introduce that?
Yes, we're doing things a bit different. So this week we have a new story that we want to talk about, you know. So this week, or at least by the time you all listen to this, the World Health Summit was happening.
Oh.
And you may have heard in the headlines, we have the Acting Director of the CDC, Dr. Ahmed Obwell. He is representing. On Saturday, 15 October, he tweeted that he was mistreated at the Frankfurt Airport while he was on his way to the World Health Summit.
What do you mean?
I mean he was having trouble, the whole director of the CDC, Africa CDC. So I'll just read out his tweet. He said, "I've been mistreated at Airport Frankfurt by immigration personnel who imagine I want to stay back illegally. My attendance of the World Health Summit is now in doubt. I'm happier and safer back home in Africa. They invite you, they mistreat you. It's time to stay from non-friendly territories for me. It's IAC, #IAC 2022 all over again. Very irritated, I'm done." He added the German Foreign Office. "This is not okay, even with visa, #Africa is on its own. Same as for vaccines and health emergencies." Hey.
This is heavy.
Tragic reaction.
CDC! My first question is, we're talking about HIV, right?
We're just talking about
World health. Where are most of these diseases highly prevalent in the global south? Why are we having this summit in the global north where people can't even go and access visas? That's my first question. And then we have a whole director, a whole senior colleague, a senior professional that can't access a summit because of immigration issues.
Immigration issues. Is that fair, you guys? That is really the thing that triggers me here about, because it's not just about this World Health Summit. Like he pointed out, there's many other conferences that are held in countries in the global north. Then they go there, they're international, they're World Health something, and they're talking about diseases about people that can't even make it to the conference.
Talking about them behind your backs.
What's that about?
Okay, so in light of Black History Month, as we're currently recording this in Black History Month, mm-hmm. we call upon the Global North, the Global South, to start thinking about their strategies for implementing and integrating people from all countries. And usually when we refer to the Global South, that's really Asia, Africa, Latin America, basically everyone except for
okay.
Anyways, so we want to make sure that we integrate everybody, and we're calling upon these people to alert them to start having these conferences, these big events, especially the ones concerning African countries or lower income countries, to be involved there. So if you're going to have a topic about, HIV, why not have the event in the country where it's mostly prevalent? That's my big thing.
That's a great question. I don't know, Samir, if you have any thoughts about this. Like, what was your reaction when you heard about this?
I think the reaction for me is that it's really sad that this is something that's not happened for the first time. Mm-hmm. He's mentioned it several times.
Uh-huh.
And he himself has got these examples
yeah.
where it's happened to him before. And I think it just shows you the reluctance of people in the global north to see Black people and people of colour in positions of high authority when it comes to global health issues. Even though these issues concern them the most,
mm-hmm.
we don't see them
mm-hmm.
in those high positions.
Yeah.
So when you have someone coming to Germany or
mm-hmm.
coming to any other country, it's a big surprise. There's these issues, but I think it's just really sad that it's not the first time. It's not
going to
be the last time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. This is just the question I pose to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer, but is this just another tool in the neo-colonialist bag?
Is this just
another tool? Like, all these barriers were seen to just entrance to a conference.
Mm-hmm.
How does that continue? I love your point about, like, how have we not learned? How many decades we spent organizing these conferences and knowing that people have these visa issues when they need to attend conferences in places where they normally require visas, and yet we still do it. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
And you know they're paying thousands of dollars to access these visas.
Mm-hmm.
So they're paying. A lot of people applied. Some of them went all the way back to the US and they were on their way to Canada and they couldn't make it, right? They
yeah.
couldn't after spending all that money.
Yeah. This is the other point. I feel like people, like, ignore the hidden costs there are being a researcher or someone from a low and middle income country where you require a visa. There's all these hidden costs. Because it's not just the cost of my flight ticket, my accommodation. I've also paid for the visa. I've had to maybe go and search for, like, different documents that I require. And it's extra energy. Sometimes the consulate, the embassy I need to go to is not in the city where I live. Now I need to go travel to a different city. There's all these extra costs. And then sometimes, more embarrassingly, I think, is when your visa is denied.
Ah,
you've been confirmed.
That's
at this
insulting.
Conference. Yeah. You are a presenter, but your visa is denied. Now you can't go. Yeah.
Having to
yeah.
do that online.
It's not the same, you guys.
It's not the same.
Yeah.
Do better. Anyways, moving on to the new global health tea.
Mm-hmm.
So today we're tackling a very heavy topic. It's a very hot topic. Abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Abortion. We have seen back in summer 2022, around June, there was an overturn of some of the abortion laws in the U.S.
Yes.
Adina, do you want to introduce us to this topic?
Yes, guys. As Justin alluded to, in the U.S., June 2022, we had the overturning of Roe v. Wade by the Supreme Court. I won't get too much into the legal history of it right now, but just to give you all some basic facts about what Roe v. Wade was. So Roe v. Wade actually started as a legal case in the U.S. In 1973, and it essentially ruled that the restrictions around abortion were unconstitutional. That was the original decision in 1973.
Yeah.
So essentially, through this, women were guaranteed the right to an abortion. And the woman that brought this up, her real name was actually, it's here, Norma McCorvey. But, you know, she had the pseudonym
Jane Roe.
So that's where it comes from. And so, what we saw in June 2022, for some of the reasons we'll go into later, is that it was overturned by the Supreme Court, where they essentially concluded that it is not a constitutional right to have an abortion. It's not a right. And then what was really the upsetting thing, I think, for everyone is that it meant that in some of these other states, they had these trigger laws that basically went into effect immediately right after Roe v. Wade was overturned.
Mm-hmm.
In some of the countries where abortion automatically became was limited, or it was just banned automatically, were like Arkansas, Missouri, Utah, Texas, Tennessee, Oklahoma. There's 13 of them, so definitely check it out. We're going to link as well to the document, like original Roe v. Wade document, if you're into all the legal stuff and want to get in there. But that's the basics of Roe v. Wade and what happened this summer.
You know, this is a very sensitive topic. We are aware it's a very heavy topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen tweets, I've seen people posting, I've seen people commenting, making TikToks, Instagram posts. There was a lot of social media outrage.
Yeah.
The response
mm-hmm.
was not good. And it raised back questions around what is the role of a woman in society?
Mm-hmm.
What are her rights?
Mm-hmm.
And to what extent is that determined by herself or by men? Anyways,
wait, I'm just curious, actually, like, if you guys take yourselves back to June 2020, what was your reaction to Roe v. Wade when you heard it was overturned? Like, it's happening in the U.S., none of us are American, we're not even American, but, like, what was your reaction? I'm curious.
I think for me, it was very much, I think a lot of people saw it coming from this background,
mm-hmm.
from the way that we know how the laws are different in different states in America. It wasn't
yeah.
unusual, but it was shocking because this completely going backwards in terms of abortion law,
mm-hmm.
when so many countries have just taken a step forward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you think, like, in 2020, like, Argentina, it was
yeah.
one of the first Latin American countries to take a step towards decriminalizing abortion. And then
yeah.
just after that, you have America taking this huge step.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's a huge step backwards.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
I think, even though it doesn't affect us
yeah.
directly, you're kind of like, okay, if this is happening in America,
yeah,
well, you know, what could happen in
exactly.
the rest of the West? So,
yeah,
it shocked
yeah.
me. Yeah.
No, it shocked me as well.
Mm-hmm.
I almost felt, I wouldn't say neutral, but you know when you become apathetic?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah.
Almost like, why are we still talking about this? Why
wow.
are we in this position? To me, it felt like we're taking 10 steps back.
Why is it still an issue?
Why is it still an issue?
Mm.
We're going to get into that. Whilst I understand that we are here to highlight missing voices in global health and highlight everyone's thoughts and opinions,
yeah.
but we will highlight the procedure behind abortion as a health concern before even it being a human right. It's actually a health, it's a medical thing. So just giving you some statistic, did you know that 6 out of 10 of all unintended pregnancies end in an induced abortion? And around 45% of all abortions are unsafe, of which 97% of them take place in developing countries. And where are you from?
Zimbabwe.
Samir, where are you from?
My mom's from Bangladesh.
Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. I'm from Cameroon. We are from different countries. But when you really take into consideration these statistics, if I was to decide to engage in such a procedure, if I was in Cameroon, what is the likelihood of me surviving? And what is the reason for that likelihood? Is it because abortion overall is unsafe? Or is it because it is being delivered by a medical professional under the right conditions?
Mm.
That's the real question. And so, for me now, I want to get into some of the meanings behind what we mean when we say legalizing abortion and what it means when we say decriminalizing abortion.
Yeah.
When you think of those terms, what's the first thing that comes to mind? When you say, okay, if I say let's legalize abortion, what's
yeah.
let's decriminalize abortion, what does that mean to you upon first instinct?
I feel for me when I hear legalize abortion, to me it's more like the state protects your rights to have access to abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when I hear about decriminalize, it's more about the state has no opinion whether or not abortion is a right. It's more about you won't be prosecuted if you were to do it. It's not a criminal
mm-hmm.
offense.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I imagine. Mm. But you know me, I'm not a lawyer.
Yes. Samira?
Yeah, I'd say the same. I mean, not a lawyer, but when you say decriminalized, it suggests there's still going to be some restrictions, even though it's not a criminal act. Whereas legalizing, it suggests there's much more freedom. It's much more normalized in society to be able to have an abortion. I think that's the big difference.
Yeah.
That's interesting how you mentioned that. I think, yes, I'm not a lawyer. Disclaimer, I'm not a lawyer. But just doing some background research on this. In simple terms, the decriminalizing of abortion means removing specific criminal sanctions against abortion from the law and changing the law and related policies and regulations to achieve the following.
Okay.
Number one, we don't want to punish anyone for providing safe abortion. We don't want to punish anyone for having an abortion, and we don't want to involve the police or involve the courts for having, for seeing or witnessing someone providing or receiving an abortion, and then treating abortion like every other form of healthcare. And I'm going to go a bit more in a bit more detail with that later. So, whereas with legalizing abortion, it's more so, okay, some countries legalize it, we're not saying it is legal. Now, what does that mean for every state? Decriminalizing now means removing the sanction. Making it, so making it, it is not a criminal act, basically.
Yes.
Saying that you having an abortion is not a criminal act.
Yeah.
That's what it's saying. But legalizing, it's like, okay, we'll make it legal. Now, what that means, is it after 12 weeks of pregnancy? Is it after 24 weeks of pregnancy? At what point? So there are restrictions there, if that makes sense. Now, what's the problem here? What's the problem with do we, first of all, do we consider abortion a human right? Is that a human right to you? Samira, you look like you have something to say.
For me, if we look at it as an essential health service, which I think it is, and I think WHO would say that it is, then I think it is a human right. It's a human right to be able to access healthcare and be able to have this level of healthiness and be safe, and I think abortion is part of that. So yes, I would say it's a human right.
It's a human right.
Yeah, I think definitely from the public health perspective, I was going to put my public health hat on and say, like, it's a no-brainer. Like, everyone should have access to a safe abortion. It should not be a criminal act. A woman should be able to just choose for herself. No problem. You just get your procedure done. But I did have, like, a different perspective. It's interesting you get into this, like, is abortion, like, a human right? And looking a bit into the history of Roe v. Wade and how they actually came to the decision initially, their key question was, like, around the right to privacy, actually. So the way they were thinking about it is, like, think about, let's say, in when dealing with marriage, right? The state cannot come and tell you who to marry.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like your marriage is almost like a private decision. It's protected under that right to privacy. I can decide who I marry. Okay, now, inside that marriage, my husband and I, we can decide, oh, husband, husband, wife, wife. Everybody, listen to voices. In that marriage, my husband, or we can decide, do we want to have a child? The state cannot come and tell me and my husband, or my partner, rather.
There are some places where they're actually more imposing laws for 2 to 3 children. They won't name the country.
True.
China.
True. China had a one-child policy, but they weren't forcing people to have children, for example. You could still decide with your partner, like, okay, do we want a child or not?
Yeah.
That is your right to decide.
Yeah.
Now, that can now mean, surely I must not have the right to use contraception if my partner and I decide we don't want that. Right?
Yeah.
And we don't want to have a child.
Mm-hmm.
So if I also don't want to have a child, doesn't that mean I should also have the right to, you know, in case I get pregnant, to terminate that pregnancy?
Mm.
Is that right also not protected when we talk about this is like a private matter? You get what I mean?
Yeah. It's true. It's a private matter. it's a private matter, and I think I would agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I will be the devil's advocate, but I'll highlight missing voices in global health. But I agree with you that it is a human right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a human right in terms of, I think that inaccessibility of quality abortion care risks violating a range of human rights for girls and women. And the right to life, number one.
Mm.
Because, first of all, guys, being pregnant, it's not easy. If you're pregnant, it's not easy. You are considered a patient if you're pregnant. Already, you're putting yourself at risk. I'm scared of pregnancy. I'm very scared. Pregnancy is scary. Women that have given birth, first of all, congratulations. Kudos
honestly,
to you. Honestly, you are strong. But we have to admit, it is a big, bold step to make. That's the number one thing, the right to life. I'm risking my life here. The second thing now is the right to the highest attainable standard of physical and mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people may say, okay, yes, not every person gets an abortion due to physical reasons or maybe medical complications,
mm-hmm.
but also mental health. It is quite a traumatic experience to go through a pregnancy if you do not want to have to deliver the child or to have the fetus in your womb. The next thing now is the right to benefit from scientific progress and its realization.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have the benefit of science. Well, you're using science. We've used it during this pandemic. Hello. We've used science in so many scenarios, in drugs, antibiotics, and whatnot. We've seen the beauty of science, right? So why deny someone that right? That right to benefit from what we have now to their science. And back to what Edna was saying earlier with family planning.
Mm-hmm.
The right to having to decide
mm-hmm.
How many children I want to have, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's a right. And
yeah.
then again, the right to privacy,
mm-hmm.
right? And then finally, the right to be free from torture or cruel inhumane acts. Anyways, that leads me on to my next point. Another fact is that around 4.7 to 13.2% of maternal death can be attributed to unsafe abortion.
Hold on, repeat that. 4.7 to?
4.7 to
mm-hmm.
13.2
mm-hmm.
of maternal deaths can be attributed to unsafe abortion.
That's high.
That's a lot.
That's quite high.
That is a lot. So think about it this way, Globies listeners, whoever you are. Let's assume, okay, not everyone... We don't have to get an abortion, right? But if the women go ahead and do it through other means and they end up getting in this unsafe position, they're likely to die.
Mm-hmm.
They're likely to die. And now it's very difficult to impose a law on someone that has... People have different socioeconomic issues. They have different backgrounds. They have different concerns. And it's so inhumane to impose a law on someone without fully understanding the scope of their life. What do you think? Well, what do you think of this statistic and this whole statement?
Yes.
I completely agree with that. I think that to say to somebody that abortion is wrong or that you should put the life of a fetus first is completely disregarding why people would get an abortion. And there's so many different reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the main ones is financial reasons, because
mm-hmm.
they can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for someone in government or someone in a position of power to say, look, we're going to impose this law,
mm-hmm.
and there's people who are completely in different circumstances,
mm-hmm.
it's just you can't... That law is preventing people who might really, really need an abortion
mm-hmm.
from having an abortion. And I think
mm-hmm.
it's saying... It's suggesting that people take it lightly, but no one takes abortion lightly. Like, it's not
mm-hmm.
the same, you know, you said pregnancy, it can have a big impact on your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So I think could an abortion, like, no one would want to do it
mm-hmm.
Really easily.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big decision, but I think it's a decision people need to be able to have the choice to make.
Mm-hmm.
And that law just disregards the fact that some people might need to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Like I keep saying, if abortion was simply a health and public health issue, I think everyone would agree that, like, everyone should be able to do it. It should be allowed. when it now becomes an issue of like the law and the state is getting involved, that's why I have a bit of a problem. Like Samira, you're highlighting, there's so many different reasons why people choose to have an abortion or choose not to have an abortion. I could have an unwanted pregnancy, but for my own reasons, whether it's religious, whether whatever reason it may be, morally, I don't think it's right, I could choose to not have an abortion. So my issue with making it a legal issue and then having it determined by the law is that it almost masks, or it almost like ignores the nuances of like human logic and thinking and reasoning. Like it just takes away that choice from people and the state just makes the decision for you. It just limits your ability to make a decision on something that is so complex. I don't think any of us would think that, you know, it's really like an easy decision to have an abortion. And, you know, it's not something that is light. And I don't think anyone rejoices like, yes, I am ending this pregnancy.
Wonderful. I mean, that's what people think, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, if we legalize abortion or decriminalize it, then everyone's going to have it. That's the assumption, that people are going to, we're going to have seen more and more abortions, which is a fact that I should be disposed of. Now, that leads me on to my next question. We're going to get real here, right? We've all said, okay, there are different circumstances, and we are different people. We are different people from different backgrounds. I want to ask you a question, personal question. If you were to get pregnant right now, would you proceed with the pregnancy, or would you terminate it?
I think it's a really good question. And I've thought about this like at various points in my life, to be honest. To be honest with you all, to be very honest with you all, I genuinely do not know. And I'll give you conscious.
Como, tell us the truth.
I'm telling you the truth, I genuinely don't know, right? Because I believe in God. I try my best to be a good Christian and all these things. And so from that point of view, there's part of me that's like, maybe not. At the same time, I'm like, okay, babe, I am 23 years old at the moment. I'm still studying my master's. I'm not financially independent. How am I going to take care of this baby and all these different things? Those are questions I'd ask myself. At the same time, I think I'm also in a really privileged position in terms of like my support system. In terms of like, maybe I'll think financially I can't support it, or I can't dedicate time to my studies. However, what if, you know, my mom is willing to help me out, like my family is willing to help me out and be like, no, you can still have this baby and we'll help you along the way so that you can still, you know, continue to pursue your dreams or whatever it may be. So because that is my specific context and I have those kinds of options in front of me, I'm glad, but to be honest, I don't know what I would choose. I genuinely don't know, even right now, I don't know what I would choose.
It's a very heavy one. I am from a Christian background, right? So that's why I always refer to my public health perspective and then my personal perspective. And I know people that have had abortions. I know like friends that have had it, and they wouldn't openly say it, but from what I know is that it's a very, very traumatic experience. I don't think people speak about it enough. It's literally, I don't want to be graphic, I don't want to get graphic here, but literally, if it's like usually before 12 weeks, what comes out, it could be the size of a lemon. It's painful. It's terribly painful. And when I think of that, I think for me, that's just me. That's just based on my religious perspective, because I'm a Christian. I wouldn't get it because I'm also financially stable. I would say I'm financially stable. I'm well off. I know people. I have a good support system, as you said, Edna. I have a good support system as well. But I'm not then going to impose that on everybody else, because people have different circumstances. Not everyone is Christian. Not everyone has the same like moral stance on this, right? And it would be still nice to have that choice, to know that, okay, I can say I don't want to do it, but it doesn't mean that every other woman is in the same situation as me. That's my issue, is that it is not every woman that has the same circumstance. I could be, 23, 25, 50. It's so restricted to to impose that law on everybody. And that's why I say, I keep repeating from my perspective,
mm-hmm.
based on my religious views and my financial status and my family, I wouldn't, because I think I'm okay. I will be able to handle it. Obviously, preferably nowadays.
Yeah.
What about you, Samir?
Well, I'm different from you guys in that I'm not particularly religious, so I don't have that element as much. And I think for me, based on what I know about myself and my position in terms of what I'm doing now and health-wise, I think I would have an abortion if I was pregnant right now, just because I don't think it would be the best circumstances for me to have a baby, either to be pregnant or to raise a child. So I think that in terms of looking at it from my life, but also the potential life of the child, I don't think it would be beneficial for them.
And it's true. That leads me on to my point around the socioeconomic factors that could influence a woman's decision to have an abortion.
Yeah.
And estimates have shown that complications of unsafe abortions cost healthcare systems in developing countries around $553 million per year US dollars for post-abortion treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, households experience $922 million in loss of income due to long-term disability related to unsafe abortion. So the issue is that sometimes, as Samira, you mentioned that you want the child to have the best life, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want that child to have everything that they need.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been studies to show that most of the time when women have unwanted pregnancies, the socioeconomic outcome of the children are not the best.
Mm-hmm.
Just access to education and participation in the labor market, contribution to GDP growth, as well as the legal status, all of these things can actually affect a woman's career, if it's a child, if it's a boy, if it's a girl. So if you end up having women, okay, yes, they're going to have unwanted pregnancy, then what happens to the future of that child? It gets a bit complicated, right? So, yeah, so essentially, the point here is that when you make abortion a legal issue, women end up going and having it in other ways,
right?
And when they have it in those other ways, what happens is there are possibilities for complications. And these complications cost money as well to our healthcare systems. Just even from an economic background, it costs money. And from the disabilities, that happens as well. And I'm going to get into what that means in a moment from a medical standpoint. But I think, Edna, you wanted to get into some case studies around different women that have had different views on this.
Yeah, as Jocelyn is just saying right now, like making it a legal issue, but at the same time it's such like a personal decision. Like we've just highlighted, we all have different points of view, and I would highly encourage everyone, we're just going to read out like a few that I picked out that I came across as I was just researching like different perspectives from different women about their decision when they were pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll link to the resource. Honestly, I highly encourage everyone to just like look through and read just different opinions.
Mm-hmm.
I think Samira, if you start with that one.
Okay, so this woman, Sanya Richard Ross, she's a 4 times Olympic gold medalist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good in terms of the level. She's top of her game, I think.
Yeah.
At some
point.
And she says that some young girls might think of their wedding day and have all these different kinds of dreams, but from the age of 9, the one dream that felt real to her was becoming an Olympic champion.
Mm.
She says, for me in that moment, when I found out I was pregnant right before I left for Beijing, it was an impossible situation because I knew I was with my forever, soon-to-be husband. I knew I wanted to have a family with him, but I also wanted to be an Olympic champion more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
The day before I left for Beijing, I had an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And as a woman who identifies as a Christian woman who tries to be Christ-like, I never thought I would be in that situation. It is still really hard for me to talk about it, but I am grateful, however, that I had the choice.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a deep one. Should I read the next one?
Yeah, go for it.
So this is from pro-life millennial women. This particular woman was talking about what pro-life means to her. So she said, being pro-life for me is more like an all-encompassing ethic. It's not just being pro-life in terms of abortion. It's about the death penalty. It's about helping poor people. It's a lot to do with single motherhood.
Yeah. And then I'll just come in with the last one. This is just an anonymous woman. She was saying, I'm currently pregnant with my fourth child, unplanned. I had 2 appointments for an abortion, but couldn't do it. It would be awful if my children ever found out that I had terminated their youngest sibling.
Mm.
However, I'm not nesting and I'm not particularly excited about this baby. My husband was very upset about it and really wanted me to abort. However, I trust that in a year or two, the dust will have settled and will have become used to a larger family.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's so important women have open access to abortion services. However, I worry that abortion has become normalized for men who view it as an emergency contraception.
Mm-hmm.
Whilst for women, it's still a very taboo subject. I would never tell anyone that I booked in for an abortion, but statistically,
mm-hmm.
I must know many women who have had terminations and don't talk about them. So yeah, I just like those because they just highlighted different perspectives. We have,
mm-hmm.
you know, the classic perspective, maybe a Christian woman, but she decided to have an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Also someone who's like well-decorated and athlete.
Mm-hmm.
We have the second person who, you know, it's a young person, a millennial, like, many people we know,
mm-hmm.
Younger people who I thought to maybe be more liberal, but she is actually pro-life, and
mm-hmm.
I think she highlighted like just a perspective that I'd never heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last person who, you know, they didn't really want the child, and their partner was like, I want you to abort the child, but they just
mm-hmm.
couldn't go through with it.
Mm-hmm.
How did you guys feel about those ones? Is there any that like stuck out to you, that surprised you?
Oh, did you want to go first? Or should I?
Yeah.
Okay, there's a reason why abortion is such a, like, it's a very controversial topic.
Yeah.
It's like, sometimes
mm-hmm.
if you say certain things, you have to pick your words,
mm-hmm.
right? On one side, so, okay, we want to make it a woman's choice.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key message here. It's a woman's choice. On the other hand, we also don't want it to be like, okay, now men can just required as an emergency contraception, as this woman
yeah.
said. You don't want to, if you're dating someone, you don't want them to tell you that, oh yeah, go have an abortion. Even if both of you are not in a financially ideal situation, you still don't want them to tell you what to do with your body. So I think it's quite complex because, yeah, I think from what I take from this, it's that it is nice to have that choice.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to that choice
mm-hmm.
and the individuality of a woman, the multifaceted, the whole dimension
mm-hmm.
of womanhood. It means different things to different people. One could want to be an athlete, another wants to get married, she wants to have children, she wants to be a doctor, I don't know, a rocket scientist, I don't know. She could want to do anything in her life, right? So if you're restricting that now, it gets real complicated because now you're putting everybody in one box.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. The second quote actually was the most interesting to me, and I have to say I don't really agree with it. So she says that, you know, I guess it's about empathy. She
mm-hmm.
doesn't agree with abortion because she doesn't agree with the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't, you know, she doesn't want people to be living in poverty.
Yeah.
But I would say that preventing abortion is actually the less empathetic way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because
mm-hmm.
there's so many cases, we've discussed loads of them now,
mm-hmm.
where
yeah.
women have to have abortions, or they end up having an unsafe abortion.
Mm.
And the fact is, if we ban abortion, it doesn't stop women having them.
Mm-hmm.
They just have them in an extremely unsafe way.
Mm.
So I think by saying, okay, we're trying to be pro-life, we're trying to be empathetic,
mm.
you're not being empathetic to the woman
mm-hmm.
who should really have that choice over her body and her safety.
Mm.
And, you know, there's loads of cases where women have died because they had such dangerous pregnancies they couldn't
yeah.
get an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, they've gone through an abortion and it was extremely dangerous and then they died that way.
Yeah.
And I just think to have that kind of, you know, if we start allowing abortion, we might as well start allowing the death penalty. I think that's taking... like, that's completely ignoring the fact that the woman is in such danger sometimes.
Yeah.
That's a big reason to have an abortion.
Yeah. It's interesting, like, because for me, the one that stuck out to me as well is, like, that pro-life
mm-hmm.
millennial as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a perspective I'd never heard before.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually, I feel like it actually opened my mind more to like the perspective of pro-life people.
Mm.
Because okay, for if we want to be balanced and fair here, I think what this quote showed me is that like even pro-life people, we can't just blanket them into one. I think there's a bit of nuance in terms of like why people are actually pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
And the perspective I understood from her is kind of bringing up this question of like, is abortion the only answer?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so I took it as more like she's thinking about pro-life in terms of if a woman has an unwanted pregnancy, what social protections are we putting in place to make sure that, for example, if it's for financial reasons, we can say, no, look, listen, we can take care of the child, you can get free food here, or blah, blah, blah. They can go to school for free. And then maybe it makes it easier for that woman to consider actually keeping that child.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say if her reason was for financial reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the perspective I thought she was coming in from of like, what are we doing to make sure that for women with an unwanted pregnancy, abortion isn't like the only answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's why she's more pro-life in terms of, you know, I just...
That's an interesting way of looking at it. And I think if that was to happen, if that was to be the case, that would be great. But I think that kind of blanket, there's other ways we can offer social help.
Mm.
While it's good in theory,
mm.
the reality is that it's unlikely to actually happen. Like
when
you think, even if you think about in America or in the UK,
mm.
if you think about how many children are in foster homes and social homes,
mm-hmm.
being looked after by people who are not their parents. And the studies that have shown that the outcomes for children who live in those types of environments
mm-hmm.
is worse. They end up having worse outcomes in terms of finances, in terms
mm-hmm.
of mental health, physical health even.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that from looking at it from that way, I see why she would say that, but I just think it's a bit too idealistic. I don't think it's realistic.
We have some different opinions here.
She said we don't have the facilities for that.
We don't have the facilities. Now that leads me on to my next question. You mentioned that she referred to the death penalty.
Mm.
And she's pro-life. She's trying to have that empathetic point of view.
Mm.
Now, Samira, you're mentioning that, okay, no, it's pro-choice. You're pro-choice and... we don't have the facilities for that. Now, can we now say that abortion or termination of pregnancy, intentional termination of pregnancy, is morally justified? Because what she's saying is she sees the death penalty, abortion, and whatnot, she kind of grouped them into one, essentially. So kind of to imply that having an abortion could not be morally justified. It's a human life.
Mm.
That you're ending. If you're killing someone through a death penalty, so that means you're also killing a child. That's what she's saying, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, is a fetus a child? That goes back to the question of, like, at what point is... What is the value of life?
Mm.
What do we consider life?
Mm.
And at what point do we consider a fetus a human being?
You know, it's... Go ahead.
It's difficult. People have so many different opinions about this. And... I think, in general, the sort of period where abortions tend to be allowed in many countries,
mm-hmm.
it tends to be quite early, actually, I would say 13 weeks, maybe
mm-hmm.
like 12, 13 weeks.
Yeah.
Obviously, in the UK, you can have an abortion up to 24 weeks, and even then after that, you can sometimes have it, if you medically need it. So there is a bit of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people would say maybe 10 weeks, maybe 12 weeks in terms of development of a fetus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is a very personal opinion. Because then obviously you have those people that think life begins at the moment of conception. And I just think, regardless of what you believe in that respect, you have to look at the life of the actual woman
mm-hmm.
who has, at that point in time, has loved ones, has
mm-hmm.
friends around her, has probably, you know, a career or something happening in her life that's already exists.
Yeah.
And... are you going to choose this over the hypothetical
mm-hmm.
life of a person that I would say isn't existing, isn't formed at that point?
Right.
Because they've not had any experiences, they don't have any sort of relationships or anything. This woman does, and those are fixed,
mm-hmm.
and those exist.
Mm-hmm.
And if you risk her dying or being permanently injured,
mm-hmm.
that to me is worse because you're doing that to someone you know has a
man.
Uh-huh.
That's a very good point.
Yes.
You've kind of answered my question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. that leads me on to the point around, what about the child's life? What about the child's life? What if it's a future minister? What if it's a future president? What if it's a future doctor?
Yeah.
And it goes back to, like, it's a human being as well. So at least we can say that the woman has lived, right? And she's living. Now you're it's kind of saying that I've seen arguments around people saying that the child, well, saying it's a child, the child is being killed without their consent. Like, what about the consent of a child? They cannot give consent at that point. So it gets tricky because now it's like, okay, you said the woman, yes, she had her life, and then you also have the child's life, which is also valuable.
Yeah. No, it's very tricky, and I could also see the point of view, like, let's say even legally, right?
Mm-hmm.
States like Texas, especially when it came to Roe v. Wade, this was their point of view in terms of, like, fighting, protecting the interests of the unborn child. In their view, it was, yeah, we understand that the woman, we have an interest in, like, keeping the woman alive, but can we just let the woman unrestrictedly make the decision to make this choice for her life over the child's life?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they felt as if the state would need to intervene.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I could almost... It also brings up in my mind the question of, like, okay, we make abortion legal, but is it always, like, completely legal? Like, is it, like, with no restrictions whatsoever?
Mm-hmm.
We still kind of do put restrictions, don't we, in terms of, like, you said at 10 weeks, 14 weeks, we say it is still
mm-hmm.
allowed. In some countries, beyond that,
mm-hmm.
you can,
mm-hmm.
depending on the pregnancy. However, let's say there's a woman... It's the day before or a few weeks before, you know, her delivery. Nothing has gone wrong. It's nothing. Are we going to just allow her to have an abortion?
So this is where I come in and say, I think at a certain point, I think it's also risky for the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, at a certain point, it's a day, I'm sorry, if it's
mm-hmm.
a week before,
mm-hmm.
She might just dying.
Yeah.
I think in the UK, you can have an abortion up to 24 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then after that, you can still do it, but it comes with many complications.
Mm-hmm.
To make it legal or illegal.
Yeah.
It's a question, but me personally, I think if I really made my decision up until that point, it's like now it gets really scary. I'm
yeah.
like, I'm not going to survive.
Yeah.
After that point.
Yeah,
I agree. And I think also it would probably be very, very difficult after 24 weeks, knowing, you know, having had ultrasounds, knowing what the baby looks like
mm-hmm.
on an ultrasound to actually do that. And I think many women would struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have to consider in some maybe very extreme case, if there was a significant defect, deformity,
mm-hmm.
illness with the child,
mm-hmm.
and you only found out very, very late in the pregnancy.
Ah.
And then at this point, is it not cruel in a way to to bring a child into the world that you know is going to suffer? And I saw a program, actually, where very, very late into the pregnancy,
yeah.
I think very close to the UK's legal frame, if not after, they discovered that the baby had a very severe condition with the heart, and they would spend the rest of their life, every single day of their life,
yeah.
which would only be a few years, in a hospital bed. They would never leave the hospital.
Yeah.
And they chose to have that baby, knowing that the baby is going to spend a few years in hospital
mm-hmm.
and then die. And my suggestion there is that not a cruel thing to have done?
Like the quality of
the
life of
the life
child.
Of that child.
This is where I may disagree.
Okay.
I disagree.
Yeah.
On this point, because for me, it goes back to my fundamental core question.
Mm-hmm.
Who determines the value of life?
Mm-hmm.
That's my question. Like, yes, they could be born with abnormalities or whatnot, but how do you know? I've worked with disabled people.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with people that have, like, difficulties with breathing and whatnot. Some of them are very happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult. It's a bit, I think, for me, it is cruel to assume that because the child is born with abnormalities or, I don't know, it's neurodiverse or whatnot, that we should just assume that they will not be, I don't know, productive or will not have a fulfilling life,
mm-hmm.
right? Obviously, not every situation is the same.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, I think that this is because, maybe it's because I'm also from a Christian background
mm-hmm.
as well. I don't necessarily think that science is everything.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe in the beauty of the the critical and the advancement in science. I love that. But I also come from a background of like, okay, you don't just devalue life just because you think it's not going to be suitable for you. If that makes sense, you don't just say, "Okay, this person is not going to be productive in society. It's not going to have a meaningful life. That they're not going to have a meaningful life. Like, who knows? Who knows? Like, things happen. There's been times when doctors have said, "Oh, you won't be able to have a child. Or this child is going to end up like this," and the child ended up being fine. Ended up being a healthy human being.
That is my thing as well. I think. Justin, your point that you brought up is one of the reasons that would probably stop me from having an abortion. Is like when I start to think about, like, okay, what potentially am I preventing here? You know what I mean? But again, I'm saying I don't know. I don't know what I would decide. Because I've also seen, as I was reading around, the perspectives of women who are like, I was really about to abort this child, but I decided not to. And now I see them, they're healthy, they're successful, they're growing. And then, like, I sometimes think about, like, what I could have potentially, like, prevented. And yeah, so for me, it's really hard even to answer that question of who determines the value of the life. Is it because if the woman has an abortion, the woman has kind of determined, not necessarily determined the value of the life, but she has chosen...
Okay.
Yeah, she has chosen a side, you know what I mean? But then on the other hand, it's like the child can't decide.
She has made a choice about how she thinks she would be able to raise and provide for that child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it, if you go to like nature versus nurture, a lot of it is nurturing a child.
Yeah.
And if you were to have a baby, okay, maybe you've decided you can't decide whether to abort or not. So you have a baby, but then you don't love that baby. You can't provide for that baby. Its quality of life, it becomes reduced.
Mm-hmm.
You've kind of made that choice to have a baby knowing that you're not in the best position. And then if you then see that the baby maybe can't succeed as well as it could have, if it was in an environment where it was loved and where it was really, really nurtured or had the economic privileges that many successful people do have. And I think that's, and I think when, especially when you look at it in a developing context, it's so much harder for those children to really succeed, especially if they're one of many, many children, they're from a very, very poor socioeconomic background, or they're just simply had because the woman had no choice. And she had to have the baby rather than because she wanted to have that child. And I think that's
right. No, I'm actually with you, Lee. I think you articulated it better than me. Like, I recap my statement. I don't think she made a choice on the value of the life. I think you're right. It's more about the quality of the life. That's the judgment she has made rather than, oh, my life is more valuable than the baby's. It's more like, well, the quality of the life I can provide for you, you know, it's a decision about.
Big topics, big things.
Big questions.
Do we have more to add in terms of we've all said that we want women to have the choice, right? That's our general consensus.
100%.
Now, we have people that are pro-life that are like, I don't know, conservative, liberal, somewhere in between, deciding. Is there a common ground between, like, we're all, the one thing that we've seen is that there are differences in both parts. Like, there's some women that are pro-life, but they look at it not just from a conservative perspective of, okay, every woman should just not have an abortion. And we've seen that in pro-choice women as well, they still understand the value of life and quality of life and whatnot. Now the question goes, now what is the common one? Can we find the common ground? Some people are looking.
No, I think, in my opinion, the common ground can come from discussions about circumstances of abortion, time scale, when would you legalize it up to, like 24 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever. I think it's when you have people, and there are many, many people in America and all over the world that believe abortion should not be an option. And those people, I think it's impossible to find common ground with, because they just believe in not allowing women that choice and that freedom,
mm-hmm.
and that their laws and restrictions and the value of a baby that might be a product of rape, it might be a product of incest,
mm-hmm.
it might be a complete accident, that is more valuable than the life of a woman and her freedom to choose. And I think that would be impossible to find common ground with. But I think all of us have said at some point there are circumstances when we would, you know, when you would see why abortion might be necessary,
mm-hmm.
you know, medical reasons,
mm-hmm.
socioeconomic reasons. And I think that's allowed you to have good discussions.
Mm-hmm.
But it's people who just do not believe that abortion should be legal.
Mm-hmm.
Those are people I don't think it's common ground with.
It's like, I don't like that. I think it's possible to find common ground, but you have to search, you have to dig deep. And for me, I think really you must really like just genuinely be maybe a bit psychopathic, but I don't think anyone enjoys the idea of like ending a life.
No one does.
I don't think anyone on any side of the spectrum.
I don't just want to be out
no.
there murdering babies. No.
Even
that's
the one that's
not
what I'm thinking. No. It's not like, what am I doing?
Today I want to kill a child. No.
No. I don't think anyone wants that. And that's where I think it's really important for us, like, especially I think the people that are for banning abortion, I'm like, think, inquire for yourself. Like, we ban abortion. Low key, some of you are just forced birth. You're just saying, I will force you to birth. But then it's like, what are you going to do to support that child? Because, let me bring up, some of you, especially I'm talking to the Christians here, and very like maybe conservative Christians, not all Christians, I know. Some of you, you want to say you are pro-life, you value the life of the child. You're the same people that hold some transphobic and homophobic views, and you would kick out your children if you found out they were gay or trans. Are you really pro-life when you do that? Is that very pro-life? So that's why I'm saying I need you to inquire about, like, when that child is born, is there like systems around that child to actually support them to have a good life?
That's my key thing. I think I agree with both of you. I think there's some common ground in terms of providing that support. I think people speak of it a lot. People mention it that, okay, the main reason why women have abortion is because, okay, yeah, they don't have the financial means, they don't have the facilities for that. But then, how much support is actually offered?
And I mean,
we can't just generalize, like, how much, if I was a young girl, maybe I'm not a teenager, I've started uni right now, I'm about to start university. If I was to get pregnant right now, what are my options? Am I really going to have the opportunity to explore all those options based on where I am and where I live? For example, the UK, yes, you may have your GP that will support you. It's okay here up until 24 weeks, but in certain countries, it's not the case. And as I was mentioning before, in developing countries, 94% of abortions are unsafe. 94% of all unsafe abortions are from developing countries. Just rephrasing that.
Yeah.
So it's just to give you some context of like, okay, we can't just as people that are promoting the value of like a woman's choice, right? We also don't want to tell every woman that, okay, if you don't want a child, go ahead and abort. That's not what we're saying. We're saying here, what is the incentive that is offered? How much support do I have? And if I'm living in Cameroon or Zimbabwe or wherever else in the world, what are my options? If I decide to have that abortion, what are my chances of surviving? Those are the things that I need to ask myself. So depending on where I am, it's a bit sad to have to think that, okay, because of my geographic location, my background, or where I live, if I'm married or not, if I have a partner, if I don't, that's what I decide if I'm going to have an abortion or not. Because now, right now, we're saying that, okay, we're promoting a woman's choice, right? But at the same time, for me, it's, what if she's in a developing country where the chances of having that safe abortion is not accessible? What do we do then? So what else is offered? So I think the common ground, going back to the question around what is the common ground, our common ground here is that we want to make abortion safe for women.
Yeah.
I think that's what we can say, right? We want it to be safe for women. We want to make even the whole concept of contraception or whatnot, we want to make it a safe procedure. And I think banning it, and I think even having abortion legal does not actually increase the number of women that end up having abortions. There's been studies that have shown that it's not the case. People think that if you have more and more women that have the opportunity to do it, then they're going to do it. No. Instead, if you ban it, then they're going to find other means. They're going to go to their own safe options, and then we're going to have more maternal deaths. And we don't want that.
If you ban it, they'll do it anyway.
They'll do it anyway.
They'll find ways. If they need to travel to go somewhere elsewhere, they'll do it. The way there's a will, there's a way.
Where there's a will, there's a way. Now, thinking from a more positive perspective, positive notes, because we want to bring the positive energy to the Globies, what can we do better? What should be done better? What do you think needs to be improved? Who do we call upon right now? Who are we acting?
Oh, I would like to begin, I think, by acting more like, I'm sorry, these people that are more pro-life. I can understand why you want to fight for the unborn child, but I think linked to everything what we're saying, for me, the key thing is to think about like the whole cascade of events that can lead the woman to a point where she now needs to decide whether or not to have a child. Mm-hmm. And we need to have policies that sort of, you know, address different points of that cascade in terms of like, if you're a young woman and you know you don't want to have a child, do you have enough sexual education? Do you have access to contraception?
Mm.
All these different things. Like, all of those things you must have access to, and you must have policies protecting those rights as well before we even talk about, like, whether or not you have the right to abortion. Because, honestly, once it's at the point of the abortion, it's like, okay, what led us to here?
Mm.
And so I think you need to attack, you know, things like earlier on in that chain of events. As one approach, rather than saying she just jumped straight to banning the abortion so that the woman does not do that. Like, no, maybe let's look at, like, other things before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree. I think that there's been studies that show that for every dollar that you spend on contraception and on preventing pregnancies, it saves about $3 in post-birth care, maternal care. And I think even looking at it from a socioeconomic point of view, but there's loads of other ways to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I think contraception and making sure that women have available access to contraception, it's free, it's not stigmatized, because in a lot of countries using contraception there is a great big stigma around it. And I think doing all those things can prevent so many unplanned pregnancies, and that would lead to a natural decline in abortion, and I think that would probably be a good outcome if you invest in contraception. And the same goes for kind of how do we help mothers who do have children instead of having an abortion? It's so much wrong with it in terms of state funding for women and single mothers, or even mothers to bring up children. Even in the UK, childcare payments are just so low compared to the cost of living, especially now.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Speak on it.
I think we can all relate
to
that.
She went there.
Yeah.
And in America, all the states that have banned abortion now, they tend to have the lowest amount of support.
Yeah.
Which is such a huge contradiction.
Hypocritical.
Like, exactly. It's
what
like,
is
what
the plan?
What are we supposed to do?
Yeah.
You know, they can't have an abortion, they can't look after children.
Yeah.
It's an impossible situation. We need to look at those things. But I think, for me, the biggest thing is just choice.
Yes.
Overall, for me, it's just having that choice to do it. And well, let's make the situation better so that women don't have to have an abortion, but let's always allow them to, if they really needed to, have the option, I think.
Yeah.
That's my response on it.
Yeah.
Very, very good points. Very, very, very good points. Just to add on to that, I think we need to, first of all, just establish that we're valuing a woman's life over the newborn's baby's life, essentially. We can establish that we don't want to put a neonatal life over a woman's life. That's the point here. And I think that once we establish that and we understand that we're no longer restricting a woman from having that choice and telling her what to do and what not to do, we're giving her the choice to be like, okay, these are my options. Let's explore that. Now, more from a policy perspective, I just think, yeah, I agree with both of you that if you start putting these, like, legal sanctions, you start putting all these, like, barriers, then it's just going to lead to what? More deaths and more women being living unhappy and fulfilled lives, right? And what can be done more is, are we making sure that we are also exploiting all other options?
Mm.
Like, before we get to that point, if a woman is deciding, okay, women, we can do studies around it as well. I don't know how much has been done in this area, but if a woman decides to have an abortion, can we actually look back and check, did she have access to all the preventative care? Did she have access to the contraception? Was she aware of the sexual education? Was she aware of her options? Can we maximize on that? And then again, it goes back to the point of, let's make it a choice. Let's make it a choice for them. And whilst we understand that, yes, there are different perspectives, there are different people that have, yeah, they may have different reasons, and it may be morally justified, it may not be morally justified.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a personal decision, right? That's a personal view that can be affected by your religious background, that can be affected by your socioeconomic background, your educational background. These are all things that are quite controversial, and from an ethical standpoint, it's difficult to formulate a one answer fits all for everything,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think, for me, just the last point is to bring it back, like, to the individual again,
mm.
for me, like, why we are highlighting all these personal stories, our personal point of view. I generally, at the end of the day, think it's such a personal decision, and like you're saying, determining the value of life, what decision I make, it's such a personal thing, and that's why I would also strongly say, like, decriminalizing, I think, is at least the way to go. The first step,
mm-hmm.
At least in places
yeah.
where it's like a complete ban, I'm saying, at least let's just decriminalize it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just think it obfuscates, like, the nuances of, like, decision making,
mm-hmm.
and, like, give different people's ways of thinking and justifying, like, what they do.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And I think that the one other thing I want to highlight is that we need to provide, because I mentioned that 95% of all unsafe abortions are from developing countries,
right?
Mm-hmm. Can we change that, please?
just a small request.
Small request. That we need to make sure that the healthcare workers are trained to provide safe and respectful abortion care,
mm-hmm.
to support informed decision making. We don't just want to say, okay, we'll make it legal, but whatnot, decriminalize it. No. We also want to say that in these places where we see unsafe abortions happening the most, what can we do about it? Can we make sure that people are trained enough to do this?
Mm-hmm.
That people are informed enough, and that they don't just go ahead and, I don't know, call the police or call the court or whatnot to, if you find a woman having it. And then again, the reliable supply of quality, affordable medical products and equipment, understanding the concept of universal health coverage. But universal health coverage includes abortion services.
Mm-hmm.
I went there.
Abortion is healthcare.
Yeah.
Abortion is
healthcare. If you want to talk about access to healthcare,
mm-hmm.
for the rich, the poor, for everyone, it's abortion, you don't want to hear this, but it's the truth, because it's essentially a medical service, right? It's a healthcare service.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, provision of contraception to prevent unintended pregnancies. Now, the last thing before we finally close, what can be done? What do you advise the Globies? What's your take-home message? What should they walk away with this? What should they walk away? What message do you want to give out there?
Oh, okay. I think for me it's about thinking about this element of choice. Like,
mm-hmm.
we've just had this big discussion, we've had the freedom to talk about our own opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Women and anybody who might have a baby has that freedom, should have that freedom to make those decisions. And I think just thinking through yourself,
mm-hmm.
as a person, what would you do? What are the circumstances that would sway your decision one way or another? Do you have people around you that are supportive of your right to choose? And it's not necessarily abortion, but your right to choose. If you needed an abortion, if you felt psychologically, physically you needed one, do you have people that could support you?
Mm.
And I think that's the most important thing, is being able to engage in conversation with people around you,
mm.
so that you feel supported and you feel like you have choice.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it sort of links to what you're saying. I completely agree. My advice, really, especially when you're talking abortion, just don't judge. Really, don't judge people. I think, like we've highlighted, we all have different perspectives. We're all coming from different backgrounds. Yet, I think in conversations around abortion, like you're saying, I think whichever point of the spectrum you fall on, like, first try to understand. Just understand the person, why they're thinking in this way, like, what has led them to this decision. Start there.
Yeah.
Just start the conversation there. And again, also linked to this point of, like, yeah, be aware very much of, like, how you speak and what you say, because I've also heard the perspective of many people where, oh, I'm afraid, okay, if I fall pregnant, I can't tell my parents, they'll be very disappointed in me, therefore I will abort.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, it's like, maybe that parent now is saying, oh my God, if you had just told me, you know, I would have been able to accept you.
Yeah.
So maybe that person made a decision based on maybe their perception of how you will react. So I think that's why I'm just saying, you know, don't judge people, just keep an open mind. Like you said, like, always, you know, make space for these conversations and for people to feel comfortable, you know, bringing such topics in a family, in a supportive environment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. yeah, I think for me, I would say, yeah, just have empathy for one another. Especially for these women. I know a lot of women listen to this having done a terminated pregnancy, and also maybe thinking about it, some maybe even mothers, children, the girls, young girls, and I'm going to address them directly, I'm addressing you directly. The decision to have an abortion is yours, and yours alone. Some women may be certain they want to have an abortion, but others may find it more of a difficult decision, but it is yours. And all women requesting an abortion, you should discuss your options. You seek a support with your GP, discuss it with your partner, or if you want to, you don't have to. But we encourage, before you make that decision for yourself, make sure that you have spoken to someone that you trust. But sometimes you can make the decision out of pressure, because you're scared or whatnot.
Yeah.
Instead of doing something like that, because it is also a very traumatic experience. Knowing people that have done it, they've told me some very, it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy thing to walk through. So before you decide that, just explore all those options. And if you don't want to, that's fine, but I would recommend you do it. And then if you're under 16, your parents do not have to be told, but usually your doctor or nurse will encourage you to tell them,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have to. But yeah, depending on whether you have that support or not, say, okay, that's your choice. And finally, there are organizations, usually known as, in the UK at least, that are usually known as crisis pregnancy centers that offer counseling around pregnancy. They do not refer people for abortion, and they may not offer balanced doctor access. Like, sometimes you can go to them and ask them for, like, just advice around pregnancy and support and whatnot. So maybe find out, we can put those links in the description, in the bio. Find out what services are available for you before you make that final decision.
You can close it there.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thanks everyone for joining us, and a special thanks to Samira.
Samira.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Very interesting.
Fantastic. Dawson, would you like to tell the people where to find us?
Where to find us. So, thank you very much for listening to the first episode of the World Health Investigation Podcast Season 2. If you haven't followed yet, what are you doing with your life? If you haven't subscribed, we have a YouTube channel, World Health Investigation. Go and subscribe. You can see our live faces right here, right now. We're speaking to you, looking at each other. We have an Instagram account, WHI_podcast, as well as Twitter, @WHI_podcast. We have a LinkedIn page. We have Facebook, World Health Investigation. Please support us for more hot global health tea.
So we have a lot in store for you guys. Please just watch.
Watch out. And more importantly, we have an announcement around the Speak of the Unspoken debate. We're having a debate. How did we almost forget to plug this in?
Yes.
Debate on the 9th November, Wednesday, 9th November,
from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m.
Yeah.
Location will be confirmed soon, but get your tickets ASAP because they are free. They are free
yeah.
in London. Come through. It's going to be a very, very interesting night. We're bringing a range of guests, missing voices in global health.
Yes.
So please do sign up. We'll add that in the description. And yeah, that's it. Thank you very much for listening to this episode, and we will see you
next week.